I'll order the education committee. Move to, for the approval of the minutes from April 4th, 2022 meeting.
Move to approve. Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Next is public comments. You'll have 2.5 minutes for public comments. Anybody with public comments, please feel free to come up. No public comments. On to item number 4, update on school safety with Chief Arnold. Good morning.
Good morning, Chairman.
How are you today?
Committee members, good. So this morning I've asked Lieutenant Justin Hembry, who's in charge of our school resource officer program, to give you all an update. Along with that will be the Director of Safety, Security, and Emergency Management for Charleston County School District to let you know what his role is and how we kind of work together. So I'd ask those two gentlemen to come up and provide a review of our SRO program in school safety.
Morning.
Morning.
How are you?
Good, sir. How are you?
Really well.
As introduced, I'm Justin Hembry. I work here at the police department here, and I'm over the SRO program. So we currently have 15 schools with 18 SROs, two sergeants in addition to that number, and then one spare to supplement for illness or vacation days, things like that. We have the schools divided in north and south locations. So the north supervisor would supervise the schools north of like Isle of Palms Connector, and the south schools would be supervised by an officer that's stationed at Lucy Beckham High School. We have ballistic shields located throughout the town. Some are directly in schools, and some are in other strategic locations in case we have to put those out in an event. All of our officers are trained in TAC Med, which is medical care under fire, under stress. They're also trained in active threat, active shooter. They're going to actually be renewing that training August the 11th and 12th of this year, so just before the school year. We have everyone is in most current training that you can get. I, for example, am going to Maryland in October to get a full debrief on the Uvalde incident, and then we'll try to bring that training back to our agency. Any questions?
What time and how much training or what kind of facilities are we offering for you for proper training here? And is there anything that we could do for that? Because I know it's very difficult to emulate, you know, a school. There's not many buildings like that. I know we haven't built out Chief Arnold. I know we really want to, I'd like to build out your training facility up north.
Yes, sir.
What is it we could do?
I'll help answer that. So whenever there's a school, Michael Reidenbach, generously, whenever there's a school that's vacant, we often go into these different schools throughout Charleston and we'll practice training. That's limited in times of scheduling, things like that. The training facility, it is a CIP project. Once that multi-purpose building is built, it will afford us the opportunity to do more scenario-based training, practice, for example, breaching a door to go into a room and active shooter type training. We are a little bit confined in terms of location to do that type of training, but whenever there's a facility or a school that we can do that, we do training. So, but in terms of the rest of the training and preparedness, it's a very wide array of topics that our SROs are trained. Every year they spend, they either go to the SRO conference or retreat training, or I believe next week, all of the Charleston County School Resource Officers are coming together to do a week-long multi-day training. Updates, policies, things like that.
Yes, sir. Their school is their jurisdiction for the most part, right? So they have to know their school at the back of their hand. And that's the most important thing. All of our officers, they know their kids. They know the problem kids. They know the ins and outs of the schools. They know teachers that might leave a door unlocked by accident. They all wear a Grandmaster key so they can get into the classrooms if they need to. All of our officers get an abundance of training. They're the most recent, most current on active threat, which is the current model is direct to threat, go directly to the incident without haste, right?
Any questions?
If I could just add a couple of things. I think that every school I've been in since I started teaching, 22 years ago, that the SRO the SROs have done building specific training for that school. So they do an amazing job of knowing their own building. And if you, who's doing that training? SLED?
For active threat?
Yeah.
We teach in-house and we send officers outsourced to training and then come back and teach it in-house. Yes, ma'am.
Nice. And usually, well, we used to have administrators at, they also do a training with administrators and staff. And if you ever want to just get nervous during a training, do one of those trainings. I think that's the most alert I've ever been at a training. I was like, what? Okay, now we do this.
Yeah, I think it starts with your it starts with your physical security, making sure that the building's secure, the officers are present, that they're aware of any problem locations, doors not working, cameras not working, things like that. And then from there, just having the fortitude to go directly to threat if something happens, right?
And I think the communication between you all and the school administration, it's so key, and it's, you guys are so good at that, you know, just always communicating with that principal and those administrators and that teacher and being a part of that community. And even things like they have, there's a, you know, all schools have a list of kids that they can immediately access. And I mean, the detail that they go to make sure that they have walked through every horrific process that could happen and how to best help the community after. It's impressive. It's super impressive.
So yeah, we work very well with the school district. And so, you know, if we get a tip, let's say on some type of behavior, the first thing we do is we correspond with them or them to us. They start a threat assessment on the children. We start social media and talking to parents and anything we can to figure out what we're dealing with exactly, access to weapons, things like that. It's very normal for us. And I think we do as good a job as any in that regard.
Yes. Better.
Yes.
Another thing I was wondering is there are certain SROs that have received a lot of accolades in the community because of their interactions with the students. They're doing really interesting things to help develop rapport and trust and build trust with the students so that they know that they're a safe person, that they know that there's, you know what I mean, that they have a sense of security at the school. Mm-hmm. Are those kinds of, I think Officer Ransom was one, he was the SRO for the whole state, right? For the whole state, is like having lunch with certain of the kids that maybe don't have people to have lunch with them and that kind of thing. Are those actions being taught to the other SROs so that it can be emulated throughout our program in Mount Pleasant?
Yes, ma'am. So they're all unique in their own way as far as like, so Ransom is, he also coaches, okay? But the things that they do very well, we have them teach to the other SROs. As a matter of fact, we have a meeting I'll leave here and go to with all the SROs, and we're going to talk about expectations for the upcoming year, and that'll be part of it.
All right, great. Thank you.
Yes, ma'am.
Thank you. And just so you know, the Education Committee is here for you if you need anything. I know the staff does everything they need to do for you, but if you need anything, we are here for you. So
yes, sir.
Thank you.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
Thank you for your work.
Hey, good morning.
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 Thanks, Lieutenant Hembree, Chief Arnold, Administrator DeMora. Thanks for having me here this morning and introduce myself and talk just a second about our programs. My name is Michael Reidenbach. I'm the Executive Director of Security and Emergency Management for the school district. And it's our team's responsibility to work alongside of our public safety partners to promote a safe learning and working environment within our schools. And that is a mission that we absolutely could not accomplish without our police and public safety partners. So I just want to thank you all and other members of council in the town for your support toward the school district, because we could not do this work without you all and your support. So the programs within our office really fall under four main pillars. The first pillar is in emergency planning, training, and drills. So the district has a comprehensive emergency operations plan that we actually just did a major rewrite and revision to last year with the help of our public safety partners to ensure that we've contemplated a variety of threats and hazards and develop a plan for how we would respond to those. But a plan isn't worth anything if you haven't trained and drilled on it. So we do training with all of our staff at least twice per year on our emergency response plan. And then we do drills throughout the year on things like armed intruder, fire, earthquake, and tornado. Our second pillar is in the area of physical security. So we use a concept called defense in depth, which is where we create layers of security on a school campus with the intention to do three main things with each of those layers. We want to deter, detect, or defend against a particular hazard. And our hope is that that one of those layers will catch the hazard, and if not, at least slow them down enough for us to be able to respond to. So you'll see fencing on our campuses. You see cameras surveilling the parking lots. We have locked exterior doors with card readers. We have school resource officers on campus and closed and locked classroom doors, to name a few. Our third pillar, if you will, is in the area of threat detection, assessment, and evaluation. Lieutenant Hembree mentioned how close we work together with our police agencies to thoroughly evaluate those threats. But then we also have trained individuals in all of our schools, namely our school counselors and our school psychologists, who use a threat assessment model to actually interview students who are demonstrating troubling behaviors, determine what kind of interventions they may need to get them off of that path toward intended violence. Now, it's important in that process to make a distinction between making a threat and posing a threat. So just because a student has made a threat doesn't mean in the end they are a threat. And so that process is really meant to work through those things and determine, are you really a threat? And if so, what interventions can we put into place to ensure that you don't carry out a threat against yourself or others? And then finally, we do work in the area of security staffing and in school resource officers. So our office liaisons with all of our police partners on the SRO program, works with our administrators, our school administrators to ensure that program is successful. And then we also have members of our team that go out into schools. We do things like random searches in the high schools on a regular basis. We go out and do security assessments multiple times per year in each building to ensure that district protocols are being implemented properly and that classroom doors are being closed and locked and exterior doors and gates are closed and locked. Then also to staff up in case there's any sort of additional issue on campus. Maybe there is a concern on campus about troubling behavior or there's been an increase in fights, then we have the ability to send staff to the campus to assist our administrators. So subject to your questions, I'd again just say thank you for all of your support and for having us here today.
I have a question about the making a threat versus posing a threat. Like I guess I would just assume in the culture that we're in now with the school shootings that there would be a zero tolerance sort of policy for that. I mean, I know you're at an airport and you joke, you don't hint at, don't even say a word that sounds like bomb, right? Like you're going to get taken to a dark room and you're not coming out for a long time. So I guess as a parent of four children in the public schools, if someone makes a threat, I don't want that person at school with my child after that threat is made. So how, I guess my question is why is there a distinction?
I greatly appreciate that question. So absolutely right. Making a threat is unacceptable and you have to face the consequences for that. So there's a progressive discipline plan that will apply regardless of the outcome of your threat assessment. You have made a threat. So that's a violation of the school code of conduct. It may be a violation of state law and you will have consequences for that action. It's really in the area of interventions and what happens to you long-term, when we look at that assessment to determine, do you really pose a threat? Because if we feel like you do pose a threat, then you're going to require a lot more intense supervision, intense interventions, intense counseling, as opposed to if it's determined to be what we call transient, which is I'm just frustrated and just blurt something out, as kids sometimes do, not realizing the impact of what they're saying. And so we want to make sure we support them properly to ensure that they don't follow through with that, with that threat, if that's the path they're heading on. Another thing of note here is that oftentimes we do have that reaction of if somebody makes a threat, we want them gone. We want them out of our school environment. We don't want them anywhere near us. But when we look at how a threat assessment, how our threat assessment process works with that intense supervision, if we do immediately get rid of them, we don't know then what's happening in their lives. We don't know how they're doing. We don't know what supports, if any, they're getting out in the community. And it becomes more of a community problem that nobody's looking at. As opposed to if we're able to create an intervention plan and create a safe environment with them somewhere within our system so we can continue to monitor them, continue to give them those supports, and really give them the help they need to keep them from going down that path. Because, again, if we just exclude them from the school environment, they still have the possibility of coming to school, even if it's unlawfully. But if we create an environment within the school structure where we can continue to support them, we know then how they're doing. We can do things like search them every day and other interventions like that.
Okay, thank you.
I appreciate that.
How does that transition work? I mean, I know in Mount Pleasant there was a social media gun threat last year. So that's what you're talking about there. I mean, it's very easy now with social media to make threats instead of just in person. I understand that kind of misdirected anger you might have in person, but how does that handled?
So I'm going to just jump in here real quick. Part of the reason we have to have this partnership is different levels of authority, different things that we can and cannot do, right? So somebody on social media saying, I'm going to shoot up the school. They can take action on that. We do a lot of research. We meet with the parents. There's all of these things. Can we charge somebody criminally for just making this general, I'm going to shoot up the school? No. So that's where we have to have this partnership and work together in order to make sure we're keeping everybody safe, because there are authorities that they have on the campus to conduct searches that we don't have because of the Fourth Amendment. So it is very much a partnership where we work together with these things. But to answer your question, when something like that comes to their attention or our attention, we work together. We address it with the student, with the parents. We'll go out in the middle of the night, the weekends. It doesn't matter to us. As soon as we get it, we act on it. We don't delay or wait on it. And we work together with them. Sometimes we cannot make a charge. Sometimes we can't say, you're not allowed to go to school. We don't have that authority. They may have that authority. So that's why we have to work together. There are times when we can make an arrest and take action that they don't have the authority to do. So it's very much has to be a partnership.
I could add something to that. And I think when you say partnership, it's truly a partnership. Like, that's the first thing an administrator does. Usually it's call an SRO to their office. And from that point on, it becomes a meeting of the minds to see how to support, what the next step is. And, you know, it's super interesting to see, you know, an administrator saying, okay, well, she or he is yours now, or the police saying, okay, well, you know, I'm done. Now you do what you're going to do. And just the difference between school law and street law, it's, you know, it's super intricate, I think, and complicated. I had the honor of cutting my teeth as an administrator under the SRO team at Wando when Reidenbach was there, and we've got plenty of stories that I could share, but I think our line was, my favorite line, the thing that I said mostly was, what's your ETA, Reidenbach, what's your ETA? How fast can you get here?
So that's, clearly that is about making sure we understand our roles.
Yep.
And that we don't go into their role or vice versa. And then on large scale events that you see these active shooter things like that, when you're talking about the victims, the suspects, the witnesses, they're all mine. Mm-hmm. The other thousands of kids that need to be moved and relocated with their parents, his folks are going to handle a lot of that because we can't do it all. They can't do the crime side of it. I can't do the reunification side of it. We have to work together in our roles. That's a big scale event, but day-to-day operations, what you're talking about, we're there for security and make sure everything's safe. They're there to make sure everything's safe and the school policies are followed, and we make sure the law is followed.
One thing I mentioned about the social media element is we absolutely have times where somebody makes an explicit threat on social media. I am coming to shoot up a school. There are other times where there are things that are misconstrued that a student has said either in a private chat or to other students. And then other people are saying, don't go to school because so-and-so is going to come shoot it up. When in reality, that is absolutely not what they said. There were things that were misconstrued. And then when this rumor mill starts, then we have hundreds of people not coming to school the next day. And so we really try to push for this rumor control, to ask for parents and our community support that if you have firsthand information about a threat, please report it directly to the authorities. Because sometimes we're chasing these social media rumors and we don't even know where the root is. And so we really just implore folks to please, if you see something, and say it to the folks who can actually address it properly instead of just posting on social media and churning up that fear.
As far as a training facility, I know Mount Pleasant would love to have one, but with CCSD being so large and so many students and so many SROs, have you ever considered creating a training facility for the SROs to be using?
So So something that we do offer is we have buildings that are in a shuttered state, so that aren't currently occupied. So, you know, currently in McClellanville Middle, the Fraser Elementary building downtown, even C.C. Blaney and R.D. Schroeder in Hollywood. And those buildings we offer on almost a daily basis to our public safety partners to come in and conduct training, and Mount Pleasant certainly takes advantage of that opportunity. And even during school breaks, we'll work to allow for an occupied school to be used so that you can train in the facility where you're actually working. So we do have those partnerships. I don't know, there's been a discussion about a full-time training facility, but we do have facilities now that we're able to offer.
I think, with speaking with the chief, I think the problem with an occupied school is you can't do what you need to do to it, and you can't breach doors and things like that. So creating that environment in which they can get in there and mess some things up is what needs to happen, you know?
Yeah. Anytime we get ready to demolish a building, we always offer that. The last thing that happens for demolition is police and fire come in and blow things up.
Nice. Okay. Nice.
Anything else?
Okay. No, again, just thank you so much. And yeah, I think that our residents need to be super proud of that collaboration between Charleston County and Mount Pleasant Police. It's
For the training facility, like Mr. Icafano was saying, is there places in the United States where you can send your officers to receive that training, where they can breach doors, they can do what they need to, like, do what they need to do to receive that training? Is there places like that?
Right, there are places.
Are they housed in larger communities, or?
I'll have to check with Lieutenant Henry, in charge of.
Yeah, absolutely.
We just need to give Chief about $7 million and he'll throw,
a building. If it's $7 million to build a building and $50,000 to send our officers every year to go breach doors at a facility in Michigan and the travel, you know what I mean?
The fire departments throughout the town have breaching doors in several locations that are designed specifically for us to train on breaching. So, for example, our SWAT team trained on one just a couple of weeks ago. How we would get in it mechanically, ballistic breaching, which is we'd use a shotgun system for that, or just any other alternative saws, things like that, if something's chained or rebars used, something like that. The problem with sending officers off location is if you're going to send them all, it creates a staffing issue.
Right? That would be good.
So if one centralized location with a door in several points, entry points within, like interior, exterior door, or further inside of a building that you can simulate, recreate over and over and over, you could get 365 days worth of benefit from that. Anytime third shift slow or there's a Friday double day of staffing, you could just send folks up to have them use it. And the idea would be to have windows that are replaceable frames, things like that you can just, okay, what kind of glass does Wando High School have in it? Let's get some spare pieces of that are maybe flawed. Let's put them up. Let's figure out how to get through that glass. So that would be the benefit of a central
really
location.
Just a shell, and you can move walls around or whatever you want to move
to. And our SWAT team has been off location to train in places that have that. Now, when you talk about the ability to shoot, like live fire drills and things, very, very expensive to build those. That's more of an off-site deal usually. But just a centralized location to move walls and train, set them up as close as you can to emulate the building you're going to be in, that's the benefit of one spot.
I see. And if we did have such a facility, would such a thing be of interest to other police departments to rent from us?
Yes. Ooh, okay. I don't know about rent, but we would certainly work with other law enforcement.
I'm just saying, if it's $7 million to build, we don't have $7 million to build it. You know,
we communicate with the teams around us. So if there's a spot that opens up, we go to train in other jurisdictions. They come to train in our jurisdiction. For example, here locally, right next door, the Cinnabar is vacant right now. You guys may have seen all the vehicles that show up there. That's kind of how it works. So it would definitely be a draw.
Also smoke coming out.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for your work.
Thank you.
Thank you all again.
Thank you, Mr. Rondock.
I just want to add, I can call these folks 24 hours a day, and they will pick up the phone and respond to us. I can't thank you all enough for your partnership and help.
Thank you. Going into the school system, school year, this is great information. We have citizens asking us questions all the time, so we appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chief.
Anything else?
No, I'm good. Right. Anything?
Thank you.
Thank you. All right. With that, we are adjourned. Thank you.
I think I just stayed here.